Good morning. We'll call the civil law and data practices hearing this evening or this morning to order. I know there's some people that need to be getting on the road, so I want to get started on time. There's not a quorum present, so we won't approve the minutes quite yet. But the first item on our agenda is House File 464. And so I'd like to invite Representative Mahoney to the table and any testifiers that he may have. Before we get started with testimony, we do have a quorum now. Do I have someone that would be willing to move the minutes from... Oh, we don't have a quorum? Oh. Okay. We do have a quorum.
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Johnson moves the minutes from the 3rd of February, 2015. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Representative Mahoney, go ahead. We probably need to move the bill to get it before us. And
Madam Chair, I would ask that you move the bill, seeing how you've been deeply involved in this particular bill.
Thank you. I would like to move House File 464. Where is it? Where are we going? I move that it be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Crime Prevention.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, there is an A-15 amendment, so if we could take that first to get it in the order that the bill probably needs to be in.
Representative Mahoney, do you have any comments on that? What that amendment does? Is it technical in nature?
I have no comments other than the fact that it is technical in nature. It was brought to us by one of the... by the reviser, and it clarifies the language and makes it simpler to read and understand. We had, for one reason or another, had deleted or not put the subdivision 3A into the correct place in the body of the bill. This does that.
All right, great. Any discussion on the amendment from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A-15 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The A-15 is adopted. Go ahead, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House File 464 does two things. I will go over the first one first. It's on custody orders or parenting orders. If you go to page 2, and I'm going to read it right out of this bill, but before I do that, I will tell you that one of the concerns, one of the ways that it's set up is in a parenting order, you have the order and then something called Appendix A, which is stapled to the back of the order. And quite often, police, schools, medical, religious organizations don't believe it's part of the order. So you have to typically spend a lot of time convincing people that it is part of the order. What this 464 does is take that appendix and roll it into the actual language of the law. So it is no longer an appendix. It is part of the body of the law. What it entails, and as they said on 2.31, each party is granted the following rights, right of access to, and receive copies of school, medical, dental, religious training, police reports, and other important information about minor children. The right to information regarding health or dental insurance, the right to be informed of by the other party as to the name and address of the school, school officials about the right to be informed by school officials about the child's welfare, educational progress, and statutes status, and to attend parent-teacher conferences, the right to be notified by the other party of accident or serious illness, right to be notified by the other party if the child, minor child, is a victim of alleged crime, including the name of the investigating law enforcement officer or agency. There's no duty to notify if the party is to be notified is the alleged perpetrator. And I want that to be really clear. You'll see a lot of family law bills coming forth this year. The whole community that worked on this was very, very, very careful to maintain all the exemptions in these bills to deal with family violence. It's not acceptable to anyone, and we wanted to make sure that if there was family violence, that it was dealt with as it should be. So that's what the first half of the bill does. The second half, quite often when you get a judgment for child support, spousal maintenance, or any other pieces that come in the breakup of a family, today you can be charged up to, you are charged 10% interest. And what's been found is that that becomes quite burdensome to someone who is trying to pay that off. And what happens is they get discouraged because half or two-thirds or three-quarters of whatever they're paying on a monthly basis goes to pay interest rather than to pay the arrears. What the second half of this bill does is allow the court, the judge, to say to waive the interest upon agreement of parties, and scans that there is a provision in here. I want to make sure I get it correct. The interest rate that it would be applicable is already calculated by the state court administrator annually. So if I'm going in January, I'm not going to get a different interest rate in August. It will be calculated by the court administrator. It's prime plus. So whether it's prime is 1%, it's prime plus 2 for that year, that's what that's going to be. It's going to be a 3% for that full year. If it's if prime is 2 and they add 2%, then it would be 4% interest that whole year. And that's the body of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Are there any questions from members on any parts of Representative Hilstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I'm sorry I was late. So I assume this is part of the package of bills that all came out of the consensus working group that are coming forward.
Representative
Chair,
Mahoney.
Representative Hilstrom, yes, it is. This, I could spend some time kind of going over what was in the consensus group or what made it up. But, yes, this comes out of that. Now, that consensus group, just a little history. 2 years ago, there was a bill pocket vetoed by the governor. The governor said, go talk to each other. I didn't have high hopes to talk to some people. For 10 years, people had been at each other's throats, and battles in both caucuses, I'm pretty sure. I know there were battles on the House floor. In any event, we reached out, we got the State Bureau of Mediation to put money to a mediator, brought in a mediator, brought in a whole series of, I was smart enough today, this early, I'm typically not at the Capitol at this time of the day, but we had people from the Minnesota chapter of the American Matrimonial Lawyers, the Family Innocent Project, Minnesota Legal Aid, Alternative Dispute Resolution Professionals, legislators, people from Family Court Referee, Hennepin County, a member of the Hennepin County Board, director. We had people from the Center for Parental Responsibility. That was the group that was primarily in favor of a joint physical custody standard or some variation of that. We had licensed psychologists in the group. We had a whole number of people in the group, and that's just a kind of a sampling, giving you the highlights. Did everyone 100% agree to this? No. But the principle was it stayed in the bills or in the language unless you had serious concerns and serious problems with it. And I would say that there are minor things in these bills that I'm not uncomfortable with, but I think could have been done a different way or whatever. but it wasn't, did not rise to the level for me to say that that needs to stay out. And if anyone said that needs to stay out, it stayed out. And after 2 years, rather than getting on an elevator, rather than facing some of those people, or making sure that I didn't have to say anything to them, we are now actually talking to each other. We'll sit down, have a cup of coffee, break, have a conversation, and it's been quite interesting, I have to say. I, as my wife would say, Tim, you've really grown. I hate that. So anyhow, yes, it does come out of the consensus. I want everybody to understand I am apparently the first bill to come forth out of this. People really worked hard, and we've brought both sides together, and I think we've made a lot of progress. As one of the attorneys said, well, we're bringing family law out of the 20th century into the 21st century. And it's the most significant. If this whole package passes, and I certainly hope it does, it will be the most significant changes in family law in decades, as they said. Now, I'll be very clear here. I know that there are people that want to do different things with these bills, and they are very open to many different amendments. I've made the commitment, and I think the other legislators have made the commitment, if anything other than technical, which was the A15 amendment, goes on these bills, we'll pull them, because it's just not fair to the other people who have put this much work into them.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney, for going over the history of our group. And if there are significant amendments that come to us, the issue with that is we have to go back to the entire group and gain consensus once more. So that's the hurdle that we would have to jump over. So, Representative Hillstrom, did you have any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney, I'm just curious as to how you came up with the percent interest number.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, we based it off crime and then allow the court decision to, and whether it's 2% or 1%, I don't really know. We just went off of crime, which I believe the courts use in other areas.
I see Representative Hillstrom, and I see Mr. Ditbrenner is coming to the testifiers table. Go ahead, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to know, is there any place else in the law that we use that number for interest when folks aren't paying?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I've gotten off civil law as long ago as I could make it.
Representative Mahoney, okay. At the table, we have a testifier. Go ahead and introduce your name for the tape and give us your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Ditbrenner. I'm the chair of the legislative chair of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. And I will speak to the issue with regard to Section 3 of House File 464 that has been raised by Representative Hillstrom. This amendment to this particular statute, 549.09, is intended to make all family court judgments or judgments arising out of family court actions, including liens on homesteads, applicable to the normal state court administrator interest rate, which the state court administrator's office sets each year. And I believe right now it's at 4%. It can vary depending upon rises or decreases in interest rates in Minnesota. And the intent behind this is to basically restore the law as regards family court actions and judgments arising out of them to what it was prior to 2009 when an amendment to 549.09 was made that made a 10% interest rate applicable to judgments in excess of $50,000. None of us family law attorneys ever thought that that particular amended statute was ever going to be made applicable to family court actions because it's typically viewed as an equitable type of proceeding that courts have the authority to set equitable rates of interest. And typically we always viewed that as being the judgment rate, interest rate set by the state court administrator's office. And as Representative Mahoney has indicated, this could have significant negative repercussions for middle-income people. The case that really demonstrates the inequity of doing a 10% interest rate is the case of Sefker versus Sefker, which actually is a case involving a property, I believe in even Representative Mahoney's area town in St. Paul, Dayton's Bluff, where this individual had been basically was going to pay $150,000 or so lien interest, or had a lien, her husband had lien interest in the property. And he decided to appeal the judgment, and he lost in every single issue except for one, which was the amount of the lien, and the lien was increased by about $20,000. And throughout this entire appellate process, he would later claim that he was entitled to a 10% rate of return on the lien when it became due and payable. This is a middle-income person, and having them pay a 10% interest rate is just a horrible thing, in my opinion. And so basically the whole goal is just to try to return the law in family court actions to the way that it was prior to 2009 and to allow that to happen. So that's the purpose of it. That's the intent of it. And it's supported by my organization and other family law organizations.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My only question then is, does that change a fiscal note of any kind anywhere else when you change that amount, or was that all a pass-through interest to the party? The state took none of that. It didn't go to the state court administrator. I'm just Michael, curious as to where the money goes.
Mr. Ditburner.
I don't think it has a fiscal note. I don't think that DHS has weighed in on this at all. I think that there is some kind of exception for child support or spousal maintenance judgments subject to 548.091 in lines 4.33 to 4.34. I think that that helps mitigate any type of possible belief that there could be a fiscal impact arising out of this.
Thank you.
Any other member questions? Very well. Thank you then for your testimony, Mr. Ditburner. And we'll go ahead and take a vote on the bill. I renew my motion to re-refer House Bill 464 to the Committee on Public Safety and Crime Prevention. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way to Public Safety and Crime Prevention. Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Representative Lane has a bill before us. Welcome to the committee. And let's see, we need to move House File 451. I would like to move House File 451 and have it re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as you've heard, the Child Custody Dialogue Group has worked over the last 2 years to discuss concerns around the processes around child custody and to try to address some of these issues. And as Representative Mahoney said, it was quite a process. We started with a good deal of distrust and even anger at some level, but we have come over these last 2 years to a place where we're friends discussing a serious issue. So it's truly a collaborative group, and even though it's made up of a full spectrum of opinion in this area, we only bring forth solutions for which we have complete consensus, and that includes this bill. And just for history, I was on the opposite side of Representative Scott on the issue that went through a few years ago. And that's just an example of the legislative components of legislators attending in this group. We were from both sides of the issue. House File 451 covers five items. The first section concerns the form that a father can use to establish paternity. This form is called the recognition of parentage. If a couple is not married, the father may wish at some point to legally establish that he is the father. This bill only changes the clarity around what signing this form means. It asks DHS, who prints the forms, to say right on the form in large print that signing this form does not establish any right to legal custody, physical custody, or parenting time, that all of that requires court action. Some fathers have thought that signing the form gave them those rights and that this has created some problems. They also need to know that signing may establish child support obligation or the need to pay for such things as genetic testing. And I want to say here for DHS that large print means what is reasonable for their graphics department to use to emphasize to the signee that signing does not establish any rights that require court action. So that's the first part. The next item is the definition of the word obligor. We are increasingly shifting from equating physical custody with child support. In fact, today the word physical custody has become meaningless, as usually both parents have some degree of physical custody. And the larger child support payments or maintenance payments could come from either parent, regardless of the amount of parenting time. Hence, this bill changes the definition of obligor from the parent without primary physical custody to the one obligated to pay the most support. The term primary physical custody has lost its meaning here, so that's why we're changing this. The third item relates to how a judge could determine potential income for a parent who's not working at the time. It currently is based on recent work history and qualifications given the prevailing job opportunities or the unemployment compensation or workers' comp that's being received at the time or the amount that one could earn if one worked a low-paying job. We are changing what the low-paid job may provide from full-time at 150% of the federal or state minimum wage to 30 hours at 100% of minimum wage. This seems more in line with reality, especially since we're raising what minimum wage is. Let's see. So the fourth item adds another piece to the deviation section of child support provisions. The judge has some flex in deviating from the standard child support guidelines. This gives one more possible deviation should there be a significant disparity of income between the parents. If one parent has substantially less income than the other parent, but still has 10 to 45% parenting time, it would not be in the best interests of the child to require that that parent provide child support payments. So this gives the judge some flexibility. And the final item concerns reporting to Consumer Credit Reporting Agency when the obligor is in arrears for 3 months of payments. This is one of the tools established to promote payment. Others include taking the occupational license or the threat of losing the driver's license. But this reporting actually has less effect as a tool for compliance and more effect on the long-range ability to get basic things like housing, employment, or buying your car, which are based on your credit rating, things important that are important to provide for a child. So this bill provides more clarity around the opportunity to pay or develop a payment plan. And if a report is sent to a credit reporting agency and the arrears are back in compliance, this bill provides more clarity that DHS must so notify that credit agency. So this is mostly around clarity around this issue rather than actually changing law. I've met with DHS regarding the provisions of this bill, and I'm working with them to clarify some of the language on two provisions. We will do this before the bill is heard in the HHS finance. And also, there may be a fiscal note on the implications of changes in their computer system in order to meet the bill's changes regarding Consumer Credit Agency reporting. This, too, will be ready before we go to HHS finance meeting. So those are the bill. Those are the parts of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Lane. I understand there are some testifiers here. The first testifier wants to come forward. I have Melinda Hugdahl. No? Okay. She's shaking her head. No.
Helpers.
Okay. They're phone a friends. Okay. All right. Very good. Representative Hillstrom has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the question, where did you come up with the decision to do the 100% of minimum wage at 30 hours instead of do other states use that number? Did we just randomly pick it? How did you decide on that standard?
All Representative Lane. Right,
we'll call somebody down because we did break into subgroups, and the subgroup that did this was not mine.
All right. I see Mr. Detberner coming forward, and go ahead and announce yourself for the tape once again, please.
Hi. My name is Michael Detberner, and I'm a representative of the American Academy of Matrimony Lawyers Minnesota Chapter. We discussed that as being a more realistic level of hours that people may typically earn. A lot of people do not work full-time. And so 30 hours was sort of a consensus type of figure from a lot of different people as being the rate at which the computed income for purposes of being tied to the minimum wage should be calculated. And 100% was also viewed as being a much more realistic viewpoint of what people who are having their incomes imputed in those situations would be capable of earning, as opposed to 150% of minimum wage. This is really an effort to help out not just low-income obligors, but also low-income obligees in the calculation of their income for purposes of creation of and modification of child support obligations.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question really was, did you just make it up, the number, or did you use some national model, or does anyone else in the world use that amount?
I'm
not aware of any other states that use 30 hours, but there was a lot of people that were participants in a group trying to fashion this legislation that did have the consensus that 30 hours was a reasonable level. I mean, it's not half-time. It's not full-time. It's right in between the two.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not judging whether that's the right number. I just want to know if anybody else uses it.
We are trailblazers here in Minnesota.
Well, that's the question, Madam Chair. So the other question then that I have about the same issue is, in the event that someone really is capable and they're just making the choice, refusing because they do not want to give that person one dime, does the court have the ability to say, look, this amount that we're imputing really should be higher based on refusal, not based on ability?
Mr. Dirtburner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, yes, they do. This is just one type of tool of imputing income. Courts will retain the discretion to view somebody as capable of working a 40-hour week and working at a significantly higher level of income than minimum wage, based upon their history and their earning ability, their vocational training, et cetera.
Any further questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify regarding this bill? Please come forward and state your name for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Julie Erickson, and I am a staff attorney with the Department of Human Services in the Child Support Division. And I was actually coming up to respond a little bit further to Representative Hillstrom's question about the 30 hours.
Sure.
And to let this committee know that that language, the 30 hours and at 100% of minimum wage, is part of the governor's budget, so it will be introduced as part of our proposal as well. And the 30 hours is actually from the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act defines full-time work as at being 30 hours a
week. Thank you for that.
So that's where we got it from.
Thank you for that clarification. Any further questions from members?
Madam Chair,
I will just say that
when we broke into subgroups and focused in on some of these pieces, we did call experts in to be a part of the group temporarily, and Ms. Erickson was a part of that subgroup.
Thank you, Representative Lane. I understand Representative Smith has a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. A question for any of the testifiers. In regard to, I'm concerned about specifically line 4.28 down to 4.34, and the reporting language is clear about in the fifth word on 4.34, required to make a monthly report to the consumer agency. I feel that this bill adequately takes care of that that issue, but I'm concerned that the language is not clear enough in regard to once the arrearages have been satisfied or a payment plan has been made, that it leaves open the amount of time the government has to report to the agency that the that there's been satisfaction. Do you have any comments about if you feel the language is clear enough in that regard?
Representative Lane.
Well, I will say that that's one of our concerns, to make sure that that happens.
I see someone else.
If we have somebody else to make some comments
forward
on this, to work on it.
Go ahead, Ms. Sommerfeld. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Jennifer Sommerfeld. I am the co-chair of the Legislative Committee for the Minnesota State Bar Association's Family Law Section. The question was regarding, can you repeat it? I'm sorry, Representative.
Sure.
Representative
so,
Smith.
It's to my understanding that once 3 months, once the certain dollar amount or the time period enters in, this this needs to be reported to the Consumer Reporting Agency within a month, once all the different elements are met. And I think that's sufficient. And I believe the intent of the bill is to have the reverse happened exactly the same, and I'm concerned that, that maybe there's a little bit of gap in the language to not satisfy the reverse action.
Ms. Sommerfeld.
The reverse action of reporting that somebody has paid it in full?
Exactly.
That is an interesting point. We didn't look at that. We did, when we put this bill together, we did talk to the department about how their procedures go now. And right now they report the arrears monthly, and when the arrears are charged in full, my understanding is they stop reporting that arrearage. So I think certainly if we need to put something technical in here that clarifies that, I think that would be something that the dialogue people would be comfortable with.
We can take an oral amendment. Let's entertain some possible language for an oral amendment if somebody wants to.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You wouldn't let us do a technical amendment on Melissa Hortman's bill just a couple of days ago that was strictly technical. I'm not certain I feel confident with waiving your 24-hour rule on a substance that has been so controversial in the past, and they've worked so hard to bring consensus. I would prefer that they work on it. It's going to the proper committee in Human Services. That's really where the reporting is going to come from. If you make it very clear that you want them to fix that issue, between now and then you can review the language and call it back if you need it back.
Let's do that, folks. Let's have this amendment go forward. Representative Lane, I'm sure you can work with some folks to get some possible language there. And when it goes to Health and Human Services reform, then I think that is probably more the appropriate area or committee to make that change. But thank you for bringing that forward, for noticing that, Representative Smith. Any further questions, comments from members? I see someone coming from the audience here to testify. Please come forward and state your name for the tape.
Hi, my name is Shannon Burns, and I'm representative from Minnesota Fathers for Kids, which is the largest shared parenting organization in Minnesota. We have over 3,000 members. I'm here to testify with regard to Section 2, specifically 2.32 through 2.34, where it states that there should be a notice that the recognition does not establish an enforceable right to legal custody, physical custody, or parenting time. We as an organization greatly respect the committee that came together to form these bills, but we have a very deep concern about the fact that unmarried fathers who willingly sign the recognition of parentage and want to be a part of their child's life are basically being stripped of any rights to their child at the time of the child's birth. Ultimately, we would entertain that both parents should, at a minimum, be allowed to have legal custody of their children as a basic parental right, so that and if they want to have further parenting time, custody, etc., established in the event that those parties separate or they have some sort of dissolution, that that can then be brought to the courts. But ultimately, we believe that the majority of fathers want to be part of their children's lives, and they shouldn't be seen as just, this form shouldn't be seen just to establish child support. It should also establish that the father states, yes, I am the legal father. I do agree that paternity is mine, and ultimately, they should have some rights afforded to them under the law.
Representative Lane, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What we have in this bill doesn't change anything in some law now. It only makes it clear on the form that signing the form does not establish paternity and does not establish physical custody or joint custody or anything. Signing the form doesn't do that. And that's the law now. We're just saying it in large print that it's clear that signing this does not establish your rights. You have to go to court for that.
Thank you. I don't know if any of the testifiers here, I wasn't in this group, the small group that addressed this, to see if there was some discussion of what the testifier here has brought up. I don't know if anyone has. I'm not seeing anyone. Okay. Ms. Sommerfeld is coming forward.
Madam Chair, I'll just make one more comment that This is one of the bills that we have agreement on to simply state it more clearly.
Right.
It is not a bill that we changed anything in law to support any one side of the issue or
right.
the other.
I'm understanding that. Ms. Sommerfeld, go ahead and state your name again, please.
Yes, I'm Jennifer Sommerfeld. Thank you, Madam Chair. We as a group, I was in the subgroup that worked on this language, we did talk about various issues regarding recognition of parentage forms. Ultimately, we were not able to agree on expanding the purpose of a recognition of parentage. Right now, the form's purpose is simply to establish who is the father of the child. And as a group, we were not able to find a way to create something different. When people are getting divorced, nobody has a right to a specific parenting time schedule or a specific custody label at that time. So you have to go to court and get an order to have something that's enforceable. And there are many of us that believe that the recognition of parentage needs to be the same. You cannot create it into turn it into a court order because it's not equitable.
Thank you for that. Any other questions by members? Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none. I would like to renew my motion for House File 451 to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Thank you, Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And just a reminder to members that concludes our agenda for today. This coming Tuesday, we will have our regular scheduled meeting at 8:15 hearing, and then we do have another hearing that evening to take up some more of these family law reform bills at 6 p.m., so I'm hoping everyone is available for that and look forward to next week. With that, we're adjourned.